Yo, yo.
Look at that, we're on. Amazing. So we start these the same way because we do. Mm-hmm. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, so I'm Ásgeir and I'm a musician, singer from Iceland.
So this is interesting because I just had somebody who knows, who's been to Ireland for festivals quite a bit, and he didn't quite get the pronunciation of your name right. So this is, he said it should be, he told me, I'm going to tell you how he said it, he said Ásgeir, but I'm not quite right, am I?
That's pretty good, actually.
Is Ásgeir pretty good?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do the Ausch.
No, yeah.
That part I'm never going to,
That's fine, you do it perfectly. But like back home, it would be Ásgeir.
Ah, so in other words, the Americanized version is okay.
Yeah, it's great, yeah.
So I like revisionist history. And, you know, it's interesting. You go through in the old days, you couldn't go through the internet and learn everything. And yet, still you go through the internet. Mm. And so, you know, obviously Iceland. Obviously, sports injuries changed your life. Obviously, you do English versions of songs, but not all the time. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I've had Jonesy on. I've had, you know, so not my first. I haven't been yet. It's on the list. Mm-hmm. But the first thing I want to do, and this is kind of like kind of a deep breath question. What are you amazed in all this time? One of two things, and there's no right or wrong answers. What are you amazed that either no one has asked you yet, or what do you wish someone would ask you?
Oh man, that's a big question.
I know. Then we'll get to the real stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, what are you amazed either that no one in all these conversations no one has asked you, or what do you wish someone would ask you? Either one is good.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I get asked so many, like, and there's so, usually it's a lot of the same questions, actually. And people ask a lot about Iceland, you know, and the other landscapes, like, influence the music and stuff like that.
Kind of like you're from Mars, right?
Yeah, it's kind it seems of like that's how
you wouldn't,
people
you wouldn't
see
think it's the most exotic place on the face of the earth, but to so many people, I guess it is.
Yeah, it's like this mysterious island somewhere, you know, for people. So I get that. I don't know what people don't ask me.
What do you wish they'd ask you?
They ask a lot about my father and my, you know, my relationship and how we work together. But we usually don't talk as much about the other people that I work with, actually.
Well, we're going to do both.
Yeah.
So I can, but thank you for that cue. Because I'm going to have to ask you, look, I'm going to have to ask about your father because that's part of the
part of the story. Yeah, I think that would be one, like my relationship with Julius, which you, the guy that you just met, actually. He writes a lot too with me. And, you know, I don't get to talk about him that much.
Well, you know what? Let's go out of order. Mm-hmm. We don't even have to go in order. Okay. So let's do start there. Because, okay. And we'll do your father afterwards.
All right.
So the gentleman that I just met, tell me in relation to what we're about to talk about, whether it's the older music or particularly the newer music that everybody is so crazy over, how does he affect what you do? You know, what is when he comes into the picture, what happens? Let's start there. We'll go out of order.
My father, you mean?
No.
Julius.
No. Yeah, let's
Julius.
Start there. No, we'll get to your father.
Okay.
We'll put that second for now.
Okay. Well, Julius is, you know, he's very, you know, musical. And I used to look up to him a lot when I was growing up. You know, he was always writing songs and I was listening to his songs.
So were you friends growing up?
Yeah, I met him when I was about 7, but he's 6 years older than me. So, and he was playing like metal at that time, you know, and he was really
And your
cool.
background, you listened to a lot of metal when you were younger, which no one would ever believe.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted so bad to be in a band with him, but I was too young and he didn't want anything to do with me at that time.
Yeah, you know? I know. You were a punk, right?
Yeah. But we started like playing together when you know, got older, about 16 years old or something. We started playing on like banjos and you know, like folk music, just playing around when I went home, you know, on weekends from Reykjavik back home. And that's sort of when our like working relationship started. You know, I one day I came to him with a song from the first album and I wanted him to write a from some lyrics for it, you know, and that's how it started for us. But he, yeah, like I said, he's very musical. So I show him a lot of the demos and, you know, music that I'm still working on just to get his opinion. And I really kind of trust his ears, you know.
And it's so important to have people like that,
yeah,
in your life.
Yeah.
That you can, because produce, look, and we'll get to it, but, you know, producers are great and A&R people are great.
Yeah.
All those people are great, but they're kind of work for hire. Even if they're,
yeah,
your best friends.
Yeah,
they're being
exactly
paid to do their job. It's only a real friend,
mm-hmm,
that's going to tell you the truth, right?
Yeah, I would say so in this case. And I know, like, his background. I know where he comes from. I know, like, I just trust him, you know, with his opinions and advices, you know.
So I know a lot of people go here, but it intrigued me because there's at least, it doesn't matter how many artists, but there's one artist in particular I talked to probably a couple of years ago that was all set to be a professional basketball player, right?
Okay.
And he was tall enough and he was ready.
Okay.
And then fate intervened and he got this strange disease, and he couldn't play basketball for a long time, and he started playing on his computer, and next thing you know, he's a big music artist.
Mm-hmm.
So now that happened with the Javelin.
Yeah, yeah.
The Javelin of all things.
Yeah.
Not just something, I mean, if you're gonna pick something unusual.
Yeah.
So were you gonna be an Olympic javelin human being?
Definitely, that was a dream, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I started, you know, playing guitar at the same time as I started track and field. And this,
wow.
And, you know, I was in, I was living in a town of, like, yeah, very small town, and my guitar teacher, he was also a javelin throw, like one of the best ones in Iceland.
So this is something about Iceland that's different. Everybody,
yeah,
who plays music also
do something else.
Does,
yeah,
does javelin?
Well,
no, nah, I'm joking, but
they do
it's kind of funny.
At least, yeah. But yeah, so I just looked up to him so much, you know, both as a musician and as an athlete, you know, and I just wanted to be like him. So I just followed his footsteps and I guess I really got into, like, javelin, you know, for the first years I was just running and you know, doing all the, you know, running and jumping and all that stuff. But then I sort of specialized in javelin when I was about 12 and you know, just practiced.
And what exactly happened? I think it was age 17. What exactly,
yeah,
happened?
Just, I had, like, a long history of injuries, like, just since, like, I was 15 or something, because I was training so much, and at a very young age that I got injured in my elbow, my, you know, my hand, my shoulder, and my back, and you know,
and your
feet.
Body finally gave out.
It just sort of did, yeah.
It just said, okay, you are now going to be a musician for the rest,
yeah,
of your life, and your sports career, not,
yeah,
so much.
Yeah, I tried to get back at it, you know, for a year or something, but it just
didn't fly.
No, it didn't.
Okay, so I need your help with another pronunciation, because I know that before age 11, you traveled quite a bit, you know, and moved from town to town. But the one that starts with L-A-U-G-E-R, I don't stand a chance.
No, it's a big word. Laugarbakki.
Like I said.
Yeah.
I would have gotten the Bakki right. But the you know, here we've been like Lauerbakki,
yeah,
you know, which,
right,
sounds more like you're in Germany and having a,
yeah,
beer. It sounds like a German beer.
Yeah.
give me a pint of Lauerbakki.
Yeah.
But one thing, I don't think us Americans, despite trying to be as sophisticated as we are,
mm-hmm,
I don't think we know a lot beyond Reykjavik, right?
No.
But being from a really, really small town, one of the things you talked about was that there wasn't as much to do. So this kind of pushed you into listening and playing,
yeah,
instruments, right?
Yeah, I think so. Like, when I look back at it, you know, I think it was good in that way. You know, I always loved being on my own, you know, and just being in my bedroom for hours, just playing guitar and writing.
I think a lot of us growing up, I was the same way. I was playing a lot of records when I was growing up. I still have them all, but yeah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, but I was, you know, we didn't have record stores or anything like that, you know, and the first time the first CD I got was when my mom was traveling to, well, she was in Reykjavik working on or something. So I asked her.
That was the big city.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And I asked her to buy a CD with Nirvana for me. And she brought one home. It was Nevermind, I think. It was the first one. And and then the next time she went, I asked her to buy more. And then I had all the CDs, you know. After a few trips for her, you know, back and forth from Reykjavik. But then as well, you know, I kind of grew up with the internet too, you know, so I discovered a lot, you know, just through, it wasn't YouTube, but it was some kind of a video like website where you could listen to music.
And you could search. And one of the things you talk about a lot, and I say this in a lot of conversations, it's not that I don't believe in genres, but I kind of reject them.
Yeah.
Because it's about the songs. It's not about, so all this, so electronic, metal, pop, this all just got into your head.
Yeah.
And it, and you know, so when people try now, I'll do this early, when people try to identify your music and say, well, it's Icelandic, but it's kind of ethereal, but it, and they try all these, you know, genres.
Yeah.
Is it kind of like, so many musicians I know, it's kind of their goal to just blow it up and say, okay, don't even try.
Yeah.
Do you kind of feel that way when people kind of say, so you make this kind of music?
Yeah. Now, I get why people want to put it in.
Well, everybody needs a category, but still.
Yeah. I don't know. I heard someone say like folkatronic.
Folkatronic?
Yeah. Like that makes sense.
Wow. So the
head.
Second. Wow. Yeah. Folkatronic.
I like that.
I kind of think folkatronic's okay.
Yeah.
Because it's not a genre that we, like if you type in folkatronic, you know, so what you can do now is you have to kind of own that, start putting that on all your social media. So when people suddenly eventually do a search a million years from now, the only thing they get is you.
Yeah.
I think we could just have the, but you know, Bury the Moon. I mean, it's interesting because, and this is where it gets confusing to a certain extent, because you talk about it as a very solitary process, and here we'll go here, but you just mentioned your friend, you just mentioned your dad. So the definition of a solitary process, is that where it starts out in your mind and then you bring it to the rest of, of your collaborators? Because again, people say solitary, but then I'm like, but it's your dad, but it's this other gentleman, but it's other people.
Yeah.
So it, that's not solitary.
No, that isn't. No, that's true. But it starts out that way. You know, I always write the songs, the music on my own, you know, the melodies and the chords. And I feel like I express myself so much through that. And I always need to be alone, you know, when I'm doing that. But and then in this project, it has kind of always been that's one thing, and then we start working on lyrics, you know.
And this is where your dad came into the mix.
That's where my dad and Julius come in, and people that work on with like translations and stuff. But for this album now, it's a little bit different than before, because I had some ideas like of certain songs, like what I wanted to talk about, you know. And so I would express that to my dad or Julius before they started writing, and then we would kind of.
So there was a lot more participation than usual.
Yeah.
And where was the trajectory of your friend's summer house and writing on guitar and piano?
Yeah, that's where it started. So that was in like, I was in the winter time. I went there for 3 or 4 weeks.
Summer house in the winter time, always the thing to do, right?
Yeah, it was great. It was actually great.
Because it's really dead there.
Yeah, it wasn't. Like, I went there on a small car, and it got snowed under, like, the day after, so I couldn't really go anywhere for, 3 weeks. But which was great. You know, I loved it. I loved every minute there. And I could just focus on music and no distractions, and it was lovely. And then when I went from there, when the sun came up and I could eventually drive back to Reykjavik, you know, I met with Julius and my father and the producer and all the people that come into the project, you know.
And you mentioned, this is kind of interesting to me, that there was just a lot of unfinished business, a lot of unfinished things. and even older songs that just never really made it, but now have come to light. So how did you filter? I usually ask younger musicians about how they filter, you know, what, how they know what their song is. Mm-hmm. But in this case, how did you filter the old into the new, and how did you know where the transition was?
Yeah, it's just the melodies that have been kind of stuck in my head since, like, for years. I just felt like they needed to...
What brought them forward now, do you think?
They've just always been there. They've just been, like, bugging.
So they've been constant the whole time.
They've just been bugging me, so I just...
You're like, okay, I've got to get this stuff out. Enough
much.
Already.
Yeah, then I can just move on
they're,
to the
they're,
next thing.
They're almost your melodic demons.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah.
And one of the things that is really relevant to me, because I always say that people always say to me, how do I get music on your show? You know, you get so much, and then you choose. And I'm not the only one who does this. There's lots of people you've been with like me who do this. But I get asked this a lot because I have very, very strong opinions on what I like and what I don't like. And then everybody's like, but you like Nirvana over here, you like Led Zeppelin over here, but then you like, you know, this really quiet, you know, and no one can figure it out. And I say, it's very simple. If it's a great song, it wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it's a great song sung with one guitar, or a great song sung with a symphony orchestra, but if it's a bad song sung with a symphony orchestra with the greatest production in the world, you can't hype me on it. You can't make me go, say, that's going to be a great song. So one of the things you've been saying, you know, is songs first, production second.
Yeah.
And yet, do you feel like sometimes because the production is so lush that people kind of miss that?
Yeah, that was what I was trying to do with this album, was to just focus on the songs, you know, and have them sort of, every song should be able to stand and you know, just with an acoustic guitar. It wouldn't need any production, but then everything just becomes so much
easier. But production happens.
Yeah, and it's just fun, you know, I love it.
Of course, who doesn't? Who doesn't?
But it can be really like... You can't get trapped in it, you know.
It can confuse people.
Yeah, and when you work, you know, you can kind of, your head can be kind of, yeah, you can get so much into details when you're doing it that you kind of get lost in what you were actually trying to do, like in the beginning. Like.
Yeah. And as I was listening to it again this morning, as I was listening to the record, what was very apparent to me is that every one of these songs is a story. Like, it really comes off. They could be like little mini novels. Was that intentional?
No, not intentional.
But it really does, because it's kind of like, by the end of it, I've got a beginning and a middle and an end, you know, to a certain extent. And one of the things you talk about, again, is letting their musicians put their mark on the song. So that gets back to, you're starting, you've got the bedrock of what you want to do, which makes you then very secure in not having to control the rest. Is that true?
Exactly. Yeah, as well put, you know, with that and the production and all that, you know, just being able to...
Then because they can't F it up.
No.
If you've made it, and look, anybody like us, I know this about me, I'm a control freak. Mm. Ask my partner and she'll say, oh my gosh... You know, if it's your idea and it's your thing, you'll listen to everybody after you've made sure that they can't mess with it.
Yeah.
And then they get to do whatever they... Then you'll say, okay, try everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But exactly. You know that they can only try so much because you've got it down.
Yeah, that's the
So
thing.
I'm on to you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that it's legit. Mm. So, you know... Let's go through a few things. I mean, in terms of the producer, did you work with somebody in particular that you haven't worked with before?
Yes. Just with one song, actually. We went to Sweden for 3 days and worked with a producer called Pontus Winberg and a few Swedish musicians, a drummer and a bass player.
Which song?
It's called Until Daybreak.
Sure.
Yeah. And I just had this very rough idea when I came out there, actually. And we sort of put it all together there in at this ranch somewhere outside of Stockholm. And it was great. You know, I just really wanted to, and I've been trying to get out of my sort of comfort zone, like pushing me, you know, just.
To so you went all the way to Sweden to do that?
Yeah, because I've been working with the same people pretty much since the beginning in the same studio, and it just feels like it's time now to try to, you know. And you always kind of, it's so good for you, you always learn something new from the people you're working with.
Yeah, if you stand in the same place all your life, you're just, you're not living.
No,
it doesn't work. So Bury the Moon, I love the concept that nothing seems to be good enough for someone's lover.
Yeah.
So how close to you is that in real life?
To me, very, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is all of us. But tell, tell me a little more, because again, what happens in these articles that you read is that's all you get.
Mm.
It's like dot, 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 and the rest is not there.
Yeah, right.
So how do you, I mean, because it's kind of a nice analogy to bury the moon and say, okay, you know what? It's one of the most romantic things we have in our world, but we just kind of look at it and we don't ever really go into all the craters and go into the really deep, dark.
Yeah.
Not so much fun stuff, but you're doing that here.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, it's, I think it's definitely something that is personal to me, you know, with past relationships, you know, trying everything I can and nothing seems to be good enough, you know. And, but it's, you know.
Is there a solution for that ever?
No, there isn't.
We just kind of have to.
Yeah, it's just the.
We just have to accept our failures.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or just say they're not failures and that.
Yeah, just learn from it, or
something.
Or
it's the other part. It's the other person's problem.
It's
not
probably
mine.
The other person's problem. Yeah.
I think
it
is. Yeah. I think it always is.
Yeah.
I don't think it has anything to do with us. We're great. So on youth, did you and your dad really have the same memories of when you were young? Or were there different versions of the story?
Yeah, well, I remember everything, like that the images that he's, you know, writing about there. But he's, you know, seeing it from his perspective. It's a bit different. And I was like 9 or 10.
Yeah, so maybe you just didn't have the maturity to really, really.
I remember, like, we went out skating in this town that we, you know, I grew up in, and I have this very kind of nostalgic kind of way of thinking about my childhood. You know, I really kind of miss some of it. You know?
Don't
and,
we all?
Yeah, and my dad does as well. You know, and we sort of both connect very well on that level. You know, and we felt like when we listened to that demo and the melody that it would be perfect to write something like that. For it, you know.
I have an 18-year-old daughter who just was visiting from college, and I'll say, "Do you remember when?" She's like, "Oh, Dad, just." And I'm like, "Someday,
you're gonna
look back and you're gonna be so thankful."
Yeah,
and she's like, "Yeah, no, I'm sure I will." No, she's a great kid, but so the videos. I mean, you know, Winter Tarantino. I mean, you know, so many influences, and they really do, like, a lot of videos don't pair with the music really well. It's just somebody goes to a director and says, here's the song, make me something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I get the feeling that's not the case with you.
Not with this album, but it has been sometimes in the past, you know.
But with this album, you had some definitive visions, didn't you?
Yeah, I think all of the videos we made were, I'm really happy with all the videos we made, and it was more collaborative. You know, I know the director very well that made the youth video and the pictures video, and so we were just constantly, you know, in conversation, you know, and it wasn't like just make something, and you know, it wasn't like that. So that's why it probably, you know, fits so well with the music, but But it was mostly his work, you know. He came up with the idea for this, both of these videos, but it was much more collaborative. He came with the ideas to us and we discussed it together, you know.
So before we do the last thing, one of the things that's always fascinating to me, and it you know, and your language is even more exotic to everybody, because like my daughter listens to Japanese anime music, and I always say, what an impossible language to translate.
Yeah.
And so they don't. There's very, very, you know, like Japanese music is Japanese music, and it never gets to English, right?
Mm.
You know, German, not easy, no. Right? Not a romance language.
Mm.
But the balance between how do you really decide when it is appropriate to go and say, okay, we're going to do this in English versus, you know what, people are just going to have to accept that it's a great song and that the words have meaning beyond understanding. How do you make a decision like that? Because your fans obviously are going to go with you either way.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a maybe boring explanation. Like, because when we were starting out, it was mainly, you know, there was this label that was showing a lot of interest for this new album, which was all in Icelandic, but they wanted it to be put out. They wanted to put it out in English just to get to more people, you know.
Yeah, and for business reasons.
I got that, but I wasn't against it at all, you know. I was
in this case.
Yeah, and I've been, you know, every time I sit down to write lyrics, and you know, ever since I started playing in bands when I was like 10 or something, we've always been singing in English, you know.
Well, and it's not what's different here is we're having a conversation. It's not like your English is got any issues. It's not like you couldn't do whatever you needed to do. I mean,
thank you. Well, yeah, it's definitely become the second language back home, you know.
That's what I'm saying. That's what's different. I think that's what's different.
Yeah. Yeah, probably it is. Yeah. But that's how it started. And, you know, with the first album being released in English, it wouldn't have gotten so much attention like it did, like in Australia or wherever, if it would just have been in Icelandic. But I'm always surprised, like wherever I am in the world, there are so many people that just listen to the Icelandic. They don't need to exactly know, you know.
But that's a tribute to the music.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that must make you feel good.
It does, yeah, and it makes me wonder if we actually need to do that, you know.
Well, you know what? Only you will know.
We obviously don't need to do it, but
But do you want to do it?
Yeah, that's the thing. But you know, having two versions of a song can also give some of the songs like just deeper meaning, actually.
Oh yeah.
You know. And
yeah.
And I prefer some of the songs in English and some in Icelandic, and that's how I choose like which versions I'm going to play live and stuff, you know.
Yeah, no, my friends in the band The Joy Formidable, who are very close friends of mine, they you know, they're from Wales. They just went back and did their first album for the 10-year anniversary.
Mm.
They went back and did the entire album acoustically and in Welsh.
Oh, yeah.
And it did really well. It did okay. But they just said, you know what, we want to go back to our roots.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's all sorts of opportunities.
I'd like to hear that in Welsh.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, their big rocking, big hit first album.
Mm.
They went back, did it acoustically, and did it entirely in Welsh.
Hmm.
It's really interesting to hear these songs that way, because again, not an easy language.
No.
So we've talked about as long as I said we would. And so the last thing that we do, which has been done by a lot of artists that you probably like or have played with over the years, to get rid of what we didn't talk about, the obvious things, is I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then you get to pick anything you want in between. And like most people like me, I have a home studio with 65,000 digital tracks and thousands of records. And this is my way of getting into the artist's head without a playlist. Because the world of playlists is great, and I've seen your Spotify playlist, and you can use things from that. But the difference here is there's not going to be any space. It's all going to be played live, and it's all going to be segued and played together.
Okay.
And it'll be about 40 minutes worth of music.
Mm.
So what two songs of yours do you want on the outside as the bread? Let's start there.
Like the first.
Yes, the first and the last. Yeah, let's start there, and then we'll fill in some ingredients.
Okay. From the new album or just whatever?
Your choice.
Okay.
There are no rules on this.
Let's just go with like Youth, maybe, as the first. Maybe Torrent.
Okay, great. So I do not air this part because I go into Pro Tools and sit and wait for people to go, but off the top of your head, no rules. The only thing is if you give me a, you know, a 20-minute piece, you've used up a lot of your, and I'll know when we're there, but we need like 40 minutes worth of music. So just give me a bunch of songs off the top of your head. No rules, no genres, my radio stations. What's really fun about this is that this show airs probably in the 2 weeks, it airs about 12 times, and then it becomes a podcast. So therefore, people come back. They'll catch it in the middle, and they'll go, oh, man, I want to hear the musical sandwich.
Yeah.
So it becomes a collectible.
Okay.
So anything by anybody, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to go through my favorite.
Yes, and you can absolutely use your device. That's part of the fun. Yeah, however, this is yours, so however you want to do it is great by me.
I think I'll just take like some of my main
influences. Yeah, your choice. Absolutely.
Let's go with Flume from Bon Iver first album.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with The Wild Hunt, Tallest Man on Earth. Let's go with Helplessness Blues, Fleet Foxes. And
yeah, we need a bunch, so keep going.
Yes. Svefngi Englar, Sigurós.
Okay, so spell the title, at least the first few letters of the title for me, because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah. S-V-E-F-N. Svef, then G E-N-G-L-A-R.
Fantastic. Yeah. Great. Now I can type that in and I'll be all set. I made Jonesy do that a lot too.
Yeah. Let It Happen, Tim Parla.
Yep.
Let's go with Two Birds, Mookie Song. Before You Were the Eyes, Atoms for Peace. Idiotech, Radiohead.
Two or three more and we should be in good shape.
Milk It, Nirvana. Comfortably Numb with the Bad Plus. It's the cover.
Yes, I love the Bad Plus. They do such great stuff.
I love them.
They really mess with songs.
Yeah, I love it.
They totally mess with songs.
And Plumb Line by Kelly Jo Phelps.
Great. And is that what you want to go into the last song?
Sure, yeah.
Great. Yeah.